Are you looking to connect with a diverse audience of developers? Look no further. You can partner with us here at the Code Newbie Podcast, and we'll help get your message out to our incredible listeners in an ad just like this one, led by me, your host. Contact us by emailing sponsors@codenewbie.org. Welcome to the Code Newbie Podcast, where we talk to people on their coding journey in hopes of helping you on yours. I'm your host, Saran, and today we're talking about open source. We've talked about open source quite a bit on the show. We've had developers talk about working on small, personal projects and really big ones like Django. But this episode is different.
My name is Richard Schneeman, and I own the Ruby language for Heroku.
Richard doesn't just work on open source. He has a project that's entirely dedicated to helping you get started in open source. It's called Code Triage, and here's how it works. You sign up for your favorite repos, and you get notified when there's a new open issue. And for many of these repos, contributing doesn't require expertise or a lot of time. Today, we're talking about getting started in open source through small but meaningful contributions. Richard also shares some amazing stories, both good and bad, from his many years working on open source projects. After this. So today we're going to talk about one of the projects that you do called Code Triage. What is that?
Yeah, so Code Triage is a way to get people who are interested in contributing to open source but don't know how to get started.
So when people say they want to contribute, what does that actually mean? Does it mean that they want to make an impact in the open source community? Does it mean that they want the coding experience? Like, how do you interpret a general interest in contributing?
For the purposes of Code Triage, we're not focused just on commits. Most people, when they think of open source contribution, they think, oh, I'm going to spend years working on this huge feature, and then everybody's going to love it, and it's going to be amazing. So much of open source happens in the issues. Mm. What Code Triage does is we try to outsource a little bit of that process of figuring out what exactly are the important issues and getting enough information to the maintainers of a project so that instead of them spending 5 or 10 minutes trying to reproduce a bug, whenever they get to the issue, it's all right in front of them. Mm. The idea is basically you want to save 5 minutes of their time by giving 5 minutes of your time.
So is it really that simple? Is it really as simple as giving 5 minutes of my day to potentially making a really big impact on a contributor?
Yeah, absolutely. So whenever you sign up for Code Triage, you tell us what projects you're interested in, and I'll start getting random issues in my inbox. Mm. Unfortunately, we kind of do just dump you into the deep end when you first get started. So my best advice for that is it just lurk, essentially. Just click on the issue, read through it. It's even better if there's already people who are having a conversation about it, and then try to read that conversation and understand, oh, did somebody ask a question? Why did they ask this question? Coming from the other side of the table, being an open source maintainer, just being able to look at the pull request or the issue and look at the pull request and say, all right, this is totally ready to go. Like, we're going to merge it. It's just really nice.
So one of the things that probably misconceptions that I have about trying to contribute to open source is I feel like I need to understand everything about the project before I can be useful. Mm-hmm. Is any part of that true? Like how much context do people need in order to be impactful?
If that was my bar, I would still be waiting for like just my first issue comment. I've been developing, writing Ruby code for about 10 years. I've been working at Heroku for about 5 years. And I think one of the biggest values that even working in open source has brought me from a coder level is being able to jump into an unfamiliar code base. You know, I know that there's all of these other black boxes and they're doing whatever they're doing, but I can kind of focus in on just this one subset. And for a lot of it, if you just do that, then that's a hugely, hugely marketable skill. And that's really kind of it. I will say that even if you know nothing, if you can just read issues, even if it's just like you have a typo here, did you mean connection or controller? Like that kind of basic stuff, it almost sounds like, oh, that's too good to be true. That's like, that's too easy. But it's like doing anything. Just start anywhere.
So the other big hurdle with starting is not just the knowledge, but it's also, will people be mean to me which is like a huge concern, right? And I think that open source has a kind of a negative reputation in being kind to specifically to beginners and people who, you know, may say something that doesn't make sense once in a while, or, you know, just give wrong information or incomplete information. Is open source a generally unfriendly place?
Overwhelmingly, I would say no. For instance, Rails even implemented a bot that whenever you open up a pull request or I think an issue, I'm not sure if it distinguishes between the two, it sees if you've ever contributed before, and it actually says thank you.
Oh, cool.
Some of it is also kind of being mindful of how you're interacting with the maintainers.
Absolutely.
Whenever I'm communicating in open source land, I try to take emotions out of my statements and try to just stick to statements. And generally things like, this is what happened, this is what I expected to happen, and this is why those two things did not match up.
Mm-hmm.
There's ways to enumerate that without having to say, I can't believe you did this and you like you messed this up.
Yeah.
It isn't open source, but I did have a really negative experience. When I was first starting coding, I heard that IRC was the place to get help.
Uh-oh.
I logged into IRC and, you know, I'm not going to introduce myself or anything. I'm just going to start off by like asking my question. But somebody just immediately responded back with, well, why don't you go ask in like the volleyball channel or something? Basically,
oh,
like, goodness. Like your response has literally nothing to do with this channel or like
no.
any of the universe that is like touching this channel. That was like 10 years ago, 9 years ago, and I've never gone back on. I think when I was first getting started, there were a lot of people like that and a lot of people who didn't really stop and consider their actions and how they would affect other people.
Mm-hmm,
and these days, in all of the major, major open source projects that I see, people are very, at least they try to be conscientious of how they're making other people feel and how they're coming across.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where there's a power dynamic that maybe people aren't aware of all the time. You know, as someone who's new to the IRC channel or new to the project or just new to coding in general, I don't have the same agency, the same power, the same confidence, definitely, as someone who's been there for a while. So just generally being aware of that power differential can be really helpful.
Oh, yes. And I had a number of kind of interactions semi-similar to that. I grew up in a time before Stack Overflow, before people would just like downvote your question if it was a bad question. Like previously, they would like verbally insult you. And so when I first started getting involved in open source, I was very timid. And that's actually how I got, ended up getting commit to Rails is basically just I signed up on Code Triage. I would just comment every once in a while. And once I got relatively comfortable with lurking and seeing, okay, I've seen this person interact with other people a lot. This person is on it. Okay, well, I feel even if they don't know me, at least I understand them a little bit to be able to kind of predict the sort of reaction and response that I'll get.
Yeah, and kind of adjust your communication style accordingly as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you mentioned that hopefully open source people are nice and kind and all that, but I think there are things that newbies can do to also help that relationship. So in your experience, what are a couple things that a newbie might get wrong?
So I think you kind of want to go in sort of as an inquisitive person and ask questions as opposed to make statements. If somebody opens up an issue and it's about database connections, you know, unless you've actually reproduced the issue and you're pretty sure and can actually point at like this line of code is where the problem is, you know, making some kind of a statement, like it's just kind of distracting. Like almost anytime I'm going to make a comment on open source, I kind of stop and ask myself, could I figure this out for myself? And so that is really helpful. Oh, and I was also going to say, just be really nice to maintainers, please. Pretty please.
Yeah. You all have a lot on your shoulders. Because, you know, one thing I didn't really appreciate until I started having friends who are maintainers is that it's not just about, you know, I'm a maintainer, so I'm a really great coder. It's I also have to be a really good project manager and a really good communicator. And I have to manage, you know, the roadmap and the project itself, but also all the very random people from all over the world who want to help out, who have different personalities and expectations and skills and expertise. And so, yeah, being a maintainer is It feels like it's tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the very last thing somebody tweeted at me was like, hey, I have this very specific problem with this library that you wrote 7 years ago and haven't touched in like the last couple of years. Like, can you give me help? I can try to help, but it's Stack Overflow is like a pretty good place. If like nobody takes anything away from this podcast except for this, it's that example apps are amazing. And I also guess I didn't mention this. We've been talking about contributing in terms of like helping with issues, but even opening issues, I would consider contributing. Don't consider that, oh, I'm running into this bug. 1,000 people must have hit it before and it's going to be reported and it's going to be annoying if I like, you know, report the same thing. But like, it probably hasn't, and nobody's seen it probably except for you, and it won't be fixed unless you report it.
So tell us more about the value of example apps.
Basically, as a maintainer, let's say I get maybe an hour, maybe 2 hours a day to work on open source. Well, I'm going to open up my issues, and if I see somebody submitted a bug report, the very next thing for me personally to be able to do absolutely anything with your bug is to reproduce it. The basic question of, is this actually even a bug, or maybe something else in your application that's not related to my library or framework is causing some kind of bad actors or some bad behavior. And one of the biggest benefits of this strategy is not only is it easier for me as a maintainer, but whenever I go through this practice and I'm going to submit a bug, I probably find about 50% of the time, I actually find that the issue is not where I thought it was. Sometimes I even just solve my problem just by trying to reproduce it.
So you mentioned earlier that when you first started contributing to open source, you were a very timid contributor. How long did it take you to stop being timid and to be more confident? Are you still timid? Is that what you're about to tell me, Richard?
Yeah, basically. I've commit to Rails. I'm in like the top 50 contributors, and like I'll get these things and I'm like, I don't know the words that they're using.
Really?
Well, it's just like I've never touched that specific part of the code base. I don't know what's going on. Or like especially the active record internals are just, it's kind of like I can do work there. It's just I'm not very effective or efficient. So there are cases where previously I said, hey, every little bit helps. And that's generally true. But there are cases where if you have two specialists, somebody who has looked at this bug, the person reporting, you know everything about it. And the other specialist is like, oh, I'm the maintainer of this. I work on it day in and day out. And sometimes, you know, somebody can just describe the behavior they're having to me. And I'll say, oh my gosh, I've seen this before. Here's the exact line. Here's the exact problem. I'm very conscious of not trying to go in and do too much on those types of issues and sort of kind of getting out of the way and letting the other maintainers where that's their specialty focus on. I will say that I'm very comfortable nowadays with my process of making an example app, reproducing a problem, and then I spend a lot of time on how I word my issues, and I focus a lot on that. So I'm fairly confident that if the issue makes sense to me, then hopefully it should make sense to the maintainers and provide them with the maximum amount of information that they need. But I'm still kind of timid whenever I, as a maintainer these days, I have to tell people like, no, I'm not going to merge your pull request, and I feel so I feel so bad.
I was going to say that sounded cold. When you decide not to merge a pull request in, are there usually common reasons why you make that decision?
So the best reason why a pull request gets merged in is if it fixes a bug. Say, this is currently how your library or framework should behave. This is how it does behave, and this fixes that. And then after that, for not getting merged in, like if it's not a bug fix, then it's a feature. And features are a lot harder. It helps if you have some buy-in, basically.
Right,
and you can say, well, it depends on the project. Some people like an open discussion before any kind of new features. And then in Rails, generally, it's kind of like you could try to have an open discussion, but we need code. And one of the problems as a maintainer is that you get all of these people suggesting all of these features. Oh my gosh, this would be cool. I'm going to do it. And you say, great, do it. And then you like never hear from them ever.
Right.
So I think starting off sticking to bug fixes, documentation is also amazing. If you fix a typo, if you add an example, I personally think that the best contributor is someone who's using something. My best contributions were when I felt a pain with some software, and then I found the source of that pain. It happened to be inside of a library, and then I went and did something about it. 90% of the time, I would actually say it's documentation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, and actually, on if you're dead set on making a feature, one really good alternative to a pull request directly to the project is to make some sort of a plugin or a library.
Yeah. Coming up, Richard tells us about some of the open source projects he's working on. He also tells us the hilarious story of his very first coding project and how he lost the code twice. Yeah, after this. So you mentioned that you are a contributor to Rails. What are some other projects that you work on?
I have a bunch of my own gems. Most of them just kind of scratched a need. The one that somebody pinged me about the other day was called Wicked, and that is a way to turn a Rails controller into a step-by-step wizard.
Oh.
So that one's that one's fun. I have some benchmarking gems. One of them is called Derailed Benchmarks, and it's a way to benchmark Rails apps from the command line as opposed to actually having to like spin up a browser and like click to refresh and that kind of a thing. I am kind of a maintainer of Puma. I have commit to Puma, which is a web server in Rails.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and actually even in Heroku, in my day job, I maintain a thing called the Ruby build pack. And whenever you do git push Heroku master and all that stuff flies through the screen, like bundle install, assets precompile, that is me furiously typing at a computer. Yeah, so that's all of that logic is in a script called the build pack, and that's open source. And that's been tremendously great. People will just pop out of the woodwork and say, hey, look, what about this or what about that?
So do you remember your first open source contribution?
Yes, I do, actually.
What was it?
So it was a counter to everything I've said ever in the history of this podcast. It was a very minor feature request to Rails.
Damn it, Richard.
Yeah. And it also is in the most not reproducible way ever, which was I went to a conference, my very first conference ever, and one of the speakers was saying, oh, I'm a core member of Rails. And afterwards, I went up to him, can I ask you like this question? Do you think this should behave like this? And I had actually already done like all of the work. I already had like a patch. I was like, in my head, I was like, I can't contribute this because like it was such a minor change. It was would basically be impossible to test it. Mm-hmm. And like I showed him that and he's like, oh yeah, like the change was in Rails, I think like one, it used to actually say the verb for the request, like git or put or patch in an error message. And then at some point in time, that went away. So I just added it back in. So I guess technically it was maybe it was a bug fix. So, okay, we'll say that. It was definitely a bug fix, and I did not break my own rules.
Yes, okay, now we can officially publish this interview, because otherwise, I don't know if we can put this out there. So this is good. We've cleared this up. This is good.
But I definitely understand. It does feel like I felt like I needed permission.
Right.
If I hadn't gotten that validation that day, then I would probably be like, I don't know, an accountant or something. Like I would have just quit programming altogether.
Yeah, but it really is interesting, though. I feel like so many people are one pep talk away from doing awesome things. That's all it takes. Like, all it takes is a little bit of encouragement, a little pep talk, some positive words. It really can potentially change the direction, the trajectory of someone's career. So, yeah, I think we saw that live just now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so now let's move on to some fill in the blanks. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, worst advice I've ever received is?
The worst advice that I ever received was in my first job. My manager at the time, with basically zero managerial experience, like literally he started like 3 months ahead of me, kind of pulled me over to the side, and he basically just told me to be less sure of myself.
Huh.
He told me that like I was being, I guess you could call it cocky. Mm-hmm. And he was basically just like, yeah, just don't be cocky. Like, don't put yourself out there. Don't like, I'm not exactly sure, but that of the details, but that was kind of the gist of it. And I kind of took that a little bit too much to heart. And I mean, so in some ways, like, sure, it's helpful to go slowly and, you know, get validation and be somewhat timid in other ways, though, I think in hindsight, it's really held me back.
Yeah.
Like there were a lot of times, especially in open source, where, you know, I kind of approach the conversation and say, oh, would you mind if I please fix this bug? Like maybe. And they're like, yes, please do it. Like yesterday, like quit talking to me. Quit asking me questions. Just
go code.
Just do it. And so that is a almost one of those like you should know a thing totally before you start doing it. Actually, even to this day, so I blog a lot. I've been trying to write a blog post a week, and that's been pretty challenging. And one of the things I get relatively frequently is people, like, I'll post on Reddit or somewhere else. And, like, the other day I had one about front-end stuff. And I know nothing about front-end. And I even, like, said that straight up in the post. I'm like, this is not a front-end mm-hmm. post. And some people had some really negative, nasty remarks. Mm-hmm, so you have to try to not let that happen. And basically, they just said something to the tune of, like, well, you should have learned how to do front-end before making this blog post. Mm. But if I had waited to, before I came a quote-unquote expert in this field, before I made the blog post, then I never would have learned that.
Mm, yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
And to those people, I tried to say, like, I try to back them down a little bit and be like, thank you very much for telling me about blank, 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 and blank. And then normally I'll say, like, I will happily, like, disregard your yeah. advice to have not done this. Otherwise, I would not have gotten your advice. So, you know, it's jerks.
It's good. I would easily look at that and think, okay, I'm never blogging ever again unless I'm 100% sure I have all the facts. But looking at it the way that you did gives me a lot more confidence and, you know, allows me to look at a potentially hurtful situation and really take it as, take it in stride.
Yeah. Sign up for my mailing list today. Schneems.com. Listen to me be wrong all the time.
Yes. Number two, my first coding project was about?
Oh, my first coding project. It was going to make me $1 million.
Definitely.
I actually asked my roommate, who was in computer science at the time, what is Dig written in? And he came back and told me Rails. So Dig was a website.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Dig was originally written in Rails. And so that is why I learned Rails. And I had a... Basically, in hindsight, it was very easily described as like an Urban Dictionary knockoff. I was like, oh, well, you know what? There's an Urban Dictionary, but there's not like an Urban Thesaurus. So I thought I was so smart. And like, and then eventually I figured out like nobody cares. Yeah. No one cares. But I did kind of, my pivot was to a kind of slang translation service. So I ended up calling it, I think the end project was United Dictionary, because that was a website that was available at the time.
I was like, that's not what I would guess that
and
does.
It was awful. It was awful. I got some contributions,
okay.
And it was like kind of vaguely, the code was horrible. I had like an upvote, downvote feature. For some reason, I was so dead set on that feature being one method that handled the upvote and the removing of an upvote and the downvote and the removing of a downvote. It was like, I mean, hundreds of lines long and just everything was so gnarly and so awful. And I think the code is actually still open sourced online somewhere. But yes, that is the first thing that I did that was going to make me $1 million. And you'll just have to find out if it pans out.
So a lot of times we make solutions for problems that we personally have. Were you having a hard time figuring out different ways to use the word shade? Is that what that was? Was that for you?
I honestly have no idea. I just like, so this was in like 2006, I guess, that I initially got the idea. And this was like kind of the second .com boom. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm not joking when I said it, like I was going to make $1 million. Like I actually thought that just having any kind of a semi-reasonable application, it was just going to be like, it was going to be great. And so it didn't last very long. But the valuable thing for me was that I had a kind of an idea in my head of like, is this even possible to make? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, you're probably not going to strike it rich with this. But even if you don't, the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to end up with this really marketable skill.
Very cool. Number three, one thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is?
Okay. One thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is that there is not a best way to do things. Mm. There are better ways, and some things can be, I guess, quote unquote, considered harmful or be anti-patterns, maybe. But as I was sitting there kind of in my apartment alone on a Friday night making this totally not beneficial to humanity in any way, shape, or form website. Oh, and I lost the source code twice.
Oh, yeah, twice. Wait, how do you do that?
I had to rebuild the entire website from scratch twice. Oh, so I had never heard of source control was not really a thing. Like Git was just sort of becoming like mainstream. Like, and everything I'd ever heard about Subversion or like Perforce was just negative and like awful. And I didn't really understand the value of it. Mm-hmm. And GitHub was kind of not a thing. So I did all of my coding on one laptop. And then that laptop got stolen out of the back of my car. Yes.
No.
Yeah.
Did you have like a window down or something?
No. Well, I needed to take it back to the Apple store and for some repairs. Mm. And so I put it back in the original box. And so I just had this like what looked like a brand new, it didn't work at all. Which is kind of funny.
Exactly. Jokes on you,
thief. I was in the same trip. I thought I would be clever and like save some time, and so I got groceries as well. I was in college, and I was bringing those into the house. I just came out, and like my windshield was shattered.
No.
It was unlocked, people. The car was unlocked.
Oh no. Okay, that was the first time. What about the second time?
And so the second time, it was also stolen.
Really? You must not live in a great neighborhood.
I went to school in Georgia Tech, which is in Atlanta. I mean, it was actually fine, but it was like the student area, which is like not as fine.
Yeah. Kids are trouble.
In that case, I did have backups. Like I did, like I think I emailed myself my entire code base every so often. After a while, you kind of just forget about it, right? And so I think I lost maybe a month or a couple months of work.
Oh no.
Yeah. And then after that, I invested in Apple Time Capsule, and I actually used that for source control for the longest time.
Okay. So you learned your lesson, and you came up with a solution. That's great.
What was the original question?
One thing I wish I knew when I first started.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So I'm changing my answer to use source control and back up your software.
I think that is great advice. When you rebuilt it the second and third time, was it better?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would.
Okay. That's good.
It felt very futile. Like, it just felt like, seriously, seriously. But I for some reason, I didn't give up or I didn't switch to a better idea. Yeah, I guess I kept going. And I was kind of a little excited to clean up some of it, honestly. And I do think it got better and better.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I kept on having in my head, I had this mythological idea that people who got paid to be programmers knew what they were doing.
And
I was convinced that if I ever got on a team, I would be able to ask them this question and they would know the answer. And I kept up that misconception all the way to my first programming job. And then I showed up and I'm like, I think you should do it like this. And they're just like, I don't know. try it.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember my first time when I was at Thoughtbot and I had a mentor and we were pairing together. And the first time he said, I don't really know if that's going to work. Let's try it. I was shocked. I was like, what do you mean? If you don't know, then who knows? Like, it was a very startling moment for me.
It's like, you mean I'm it? I am the source matter expert? Yeah. No.
This is the best we got. No, there has to be more. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. You want to say goodbye?
Thank you very much for having me on the show. And thank you all for listening to my horrible ideas and awful interview advice. I hope you got something out of this.
And that's the end of our last episode of season 2. Let me know what you think. Tweet me at CodeNewbies or send an email, hello@codenewbie.org. If you're in DC or Philly, check out our local Code Newbie meetup groups. We've got community coding sessions and awesome events each month. So if you're looking for real-life human interaction, look us up on meetup.com. For info on the podcast, check out www.codenewbie.org/podcast and join us for our weekly Twitter chats. We've got our Wednesday chats at 9 p.m. Eastern Time and our weekly coding check-in every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks for listening. See you next season.